Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and as we get into the spring planting season across Iowa and the Midwest and the United States, who better to talk to about agricultural issues than the Secretary of Agriculture in the great state of Iowa, Mike Naig, and he happens to be with me today as my guest. Very busy person, and I really appreciate you taking the time, Mike, to be on the show today.
Well, Robin, thanks for the invitation, and I'm glad you kind of that. I love the setup, right? Because it is spring; it's a beautiful time of year. Now, it's also a time of year where it could be 70 degrees, and then you can have a flat-out blizzard the next day. But welcome to March in Iowa. But yes, in just a matter of a few short weeks, really, we'll be headed to the field to get a crop in the ground.
Well, it's that time of the year where things turn from brown to green and hope takes over. And it's a great time of the year. And so it's really good to have you. I know you've been very busy. You know, you were just out of the country down in Central America last month. Let's just start there because you've been busy on a trade mission. Why there, and what were there some of the results?
You know, this is something the state of Iowa does very well, and we've got a long history of doing this, of taking trade missions. In this case, we had a great group of farmers, corn growers, soybean growers, Farm Bureau, beef producers, pork producers. And Economic Development Authority actually organizes the trip, and I led the mission. And we do an ag trip on average for the state of Iowa, maybe twice a year, maybe three times a year if the conditions are right. And then we also are receiving lots of delegations that come into the state, which we love to do because then you get to show them around and you know, actually take them to some of our businesses and farms and let them experience it for themselves. But I tell you, I love taking farmers on the road, and there's nothing better than you sit down across the table from a customer somewhere, wherever you are in the world, Asia, certainly South America, Central America, and say, what do you want to know? What questions do you have? Sometimes we're knocking down myths about U.S. agriculture. A lot of times it's just a chance to, as I like to say, we find that farmers and agriculture people speak the same language all around the world. Doesn't matter where you are. So you always end up figuring out, look at each other and say, you know what, we're experiencing some of the same challenges. But Costa Rica and Guatemala, two really great markets for us. Central America is a good market for us. We've got a free trade agreement with the region. And we have a great logistical advantage because the bulk products, corn, soybean meal, even containerized pork and beef, you know, comes out of the port of New Orleans typically and across the Gulf through the Panama Canal and then into their Pacific ports on the Pacific side of both of these countries. Guatemala happens to be the largest economy in Central America, very important for many reasons. I mean, let's be, you know, right now, of course, we're talking about people movements through Central America. Guatemala is a place that people are moving to, moving from, and moving through. And so that was interesting to talk with folks there, the U.S. ambassador to Guatemala. We had a chance to meet with him. But USDA folks in the region, good market, big market, growing place for us. Costa Rica is a place that's actually got, they're a really strong economy in the and a great democracy, a great partner of the United States, and a high affinity for U.S. ag products. And so, again, soybean meal and corn to help feed their livestock industries. Pork is a big staple in both economies. Beef's a good opportunity, and we think there's an ethanol upside as well. So I was really impressed with both places. We learned a lot. And I don't mind telling you, Robin, it was quite cold in Iowa when we were in Costa Rica in particular. And in fact, one of the days, I have to tell you just a funny little aside, is we were visiting a cold storage of a meat importer, and it was warmer in the freezer in Costa Rica than it was at our farm in Northwest Iowa. So that just we were all taking appreciating where we were on that day.
I would imagine though that those discussions were very interesting in light of everything going on, and I'm going to bring in a lot of topics here, but you talk about a common language. I'm sure they understand what tariffs are, and because that's become a word kind of brought up here, and with the Trump administration. Also, I'm sure that came up, and also did the Panama Canal issue
Canal.
come up at all?
It really did, and we took that away as a really interesting. So you might think that Central America is a place that we would go across the Gulf and just right down to ports that might be on the Gulf side or the Atlantic side. Well, just the way that those countries lay and where the mountain ranges go and the kind of weather that you have, it is really it's nearly impo it is impossible for them to import bulk items like corn and soybean meal and trucks that would have to cross mountains in the rain. So I think that was a good learning for us, is that no, in fact, even the canal is critically important to serve those Central American countries, because you've got to get through to the Pacific side. And so look, there are they had some disruption to the canal operations last year because of drought conditions. Think of it, water gets released every time a ship transits the canal, and so they did have to pull back on some restrictions. And then there's been lots of talk about what types of countries or companies are controlling or managing the ports that are around in and around the canal. And so I think it definitely came up. And the way that our customers were talking about it is to say, look, we need a disrupt we need a disruption free or a better way to say, we need it to operate smoothly, and it has for many, many years. But I guess what I really came home with was, and I think our farmers did too, is there is a very much a strategic interest in the United States in ensuring that that canal is operating smoothly, and that certainly the United States is not at a disadvantage when it comes to using the facility. So, and the other was just that, look, those countries need to invest in their infrastructure and their ports. And again, what does it mean to be a good partner there? We want to make sure that investments that get made in those ports are actually, again, good for all of us in the Western Hemisphere, and that they're not necessarily having, China or somebody come in and own and build that port infrastructure. So timing's everything on these things, and those were definitely, that infrastructure piece and the canal piece was very much a topic of conversation. We came home with a better appreciation for what that means.
Well, the Panama Canal has become a big issue. Tariffs have become a big issue. Immigration, as you, I know you keep close contact with farmers, excuse me, across Iowa. How much uncertainty is there with all this going on? I mean, what are you kind of hearing as, farmers get ready to go out for another year?
Yeah, let's take tariffs, because it certainly, look, some facts. Iowa is a significant food and ag exporter. We're second in the nation in terms of the value of our exports, and so trade matters to us. Canada and Mexico are our number one and number two trading partners, and a significant amount of pork and soybean is exported to China. And so those are important. Those are big markets for us. And so when I'm talking to folks, you say, well, look, things that disrupt that, of course, can have an impact on the farm economy and certainly prices paid. And so any reasonable person says, well, we would like to see a situation where the tariffs and the retaliatory tariffs don't negatively impact agriculture for the long run. And yet you will find people that will say, especially as we think about retaliatory tariffs, meaning let's take the European Union, right? They tariff U.S. products in. There's non-tariff barriers that they have worked hard, frankly, to keep U.S. products out. And yet we buy from the Europeans. Well, there's a fairness issue there, isn't there? And I think there's a lot of folks that say, the idea that we give as good as we get maybe has some bearing, and that tariffs can be a tool in that equation. I think what folks maybe are concerned about would be a situation where you might have a country retaliates against the U.S. and they specifically go after agriculture, because it actually is a bright spot for exports and because it strikes at the heartland of the country. And so, again, what we would like to say is we think that there is a lot of work that can be done to create more fairness in trading relationships with the United States that we have been taken advantage of in some cases, that we do not have free and fair access to a lot of countries. Let's just make sure that we're using all the tools at our disposal and that ag doesn't bear the brunt and doesn't bear the brunt for the long term. That I think that's what concerns folks. So maybe another way to say that would be, if tariffs are the end game, that would be concerning. If tariffs are a tool, are part of a larger strategy that gets us more market access, then maybe that can be worth some of the short-term pain. The other way I've thought about this, Robin, is that there's a lot of talk about, you know, the president, the administration wants to reshore manufacturing, reshore innovation, be a productive, the United States to be a more productive place. You know, agriculture is actually a real bright spot when it comes to productivity. We are an incredibly productive sector. And, you know, maybe there's some lessons to be learned from others about that. And again, let's make sure that we build on that strength, not do things that actually harm it. So, you know, it's concerning. But I think what everybody's looking at is that longer term, can we get to a better place as a result?
I'm glad you brought up some of the specifics about Europe, because I read recently from a reputable source that, for example, on autos, we have a 2.5% tariff on European autos. Theirs is 10% on us.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a big story out here that needs to be told, because the media is portraying this, and I hate to beat up on the media, but honestly, it's been mostly one-sided. And I think more of these facts come out, like you just said, there is a fairness issue, not just with China, not just with Mexico, but countries in Europe.
And by the way, these are not new phenomenon, right? These are things that, frankly, you can go back to the end of the World War II and some of the, you know, those situations. And you look at, okay, so let's try to think about fairness when it comes to trade, and then how do you negotiate that? And I think that's a worthy goal. Now you look closer to, you know, Canada is a good example of, we have a very compatible economy with Canada. Things move across the border back and forth. And you look at Mexico and the situation there and border security issues and fentanyl and all those types of things. And you say, gosh, those are, American people spoke pretty loud and clear. They wanted those dealt with. Mm-hmm. And if tariffs are a tool to help bring that to some sort of a conclusion or to a better place, you know, so be it. But again, let's make sure we're using all of our tools, not just something that negatively impacts agriculture.
How concerned did you are you, Mr. Secretary, about immigration and its impact if immigration control efforts perhaps go too far? I ask because I read an article about dairy farmers in Wisconsin, different type of agricultural industry, but they really fear that too broad of a crackdown on immigration at this point will really hurt their industry. Is that something you worry about with Iowa corn and soybean farmers as well, and hog farmers?
You know, look, talk about another issue that has just been decades overdue for being dealt with. I think most folks and the American people, again, spoke pretty loud and clear this the past fall that they wanted something done. And so I do believe that, so agriculture, there's a lot of foreign born labor that's needed and that are a lot of employment of foreign born labor that's in agriculture. And that's not, and by the way, you know, you look at the dairy situation, yes, but probably even fruit and veg production, where you've got very timely harvest needs and you've got, you know, seasonal workforce. So look, this is a U.S. issue. This is a U.S. agriculture issue. It's not something that's specific to Iowa or the Midwest. And I think there needs to be a U.S. agriculture solution. But frankly, I think the reason that we haven't been able to actually have true immigration reform, where you create actual ag worker visa programs that are legal, that are functional, that accommodate for the need of the workforce, is because we haven't had border security. And if you don't have border security, then how do you ever get, if you can't get off square one, how do you ever talk about what comes next? And so, to be candid, I'm just so anxious for us to have that next conversation. And I think ag may very well be a good area where you can see agreement across the country from different regions and different types of ag, and should be bipartisan, to try to get to a more workable, functional, predictable, usable system that makes it all legal and above board. And we've got border security at the core of that, so that you don't say, well, now we're just continuing to kick this can down the road. So I remain hopeful. I've always thought that there was, if agriculture, if we had been left to our own devices and just said, here, let the ag community come up with the solution that probably could have been done a long time ago and would have been something that could have been passed through a Congress. But, you know, it always got caught up in the left or the right, you know, saying, well, you can't do that. And frankly, again, now's the time. Let's deal with border security in a real way, and then let's pursue these real solutions.
My students in the class I teach can't believe, they think I'm kidding when I talk about how President Reagan and House Speaker Tip O'Neill compromised on immigration back in the 80s. They both gave a little bit. They're like, really? And my point is that could happen now. We
Could.
just have to move beyond some of those things. What new USDA Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins, have you had some discussions with her? What can we see from her?
Well, I'm impressed. She's a very dynamic individual. You can tell she's a hard charger. And I think that this is somebody that, just like the overall tone of the administration, is the she intends to be getting things done. And frankly, we need some things done. So everything from reviewing of federal funding and different programs at USDA, the need to pursue a farm bill, the need to address high path avian influenza, the need to address trade, you know, all of those types of things. That is a full plate for one individual. And here's the other thing I would say is I've been really impressed with the team that she's assembling at USDA. Now it'll be some time, unfortunately. You know, the undersecretaries and the administrators of some of these different agencies, they have to be Senate confirmed, and that's a process. It'll be weeks, maybe even months before some of those folks are in place. And so I know she's trying to work really hard, and yet doesn't really have a filled out team just yet. But the names we're hearing are really good folks. Couldn't be happier about that. And yeah, I think she's every signal that she's sending is that she wants to work with states and she wants to hear from farmers. Hey, I like both of those, and let's do more of that.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm just delighted to have as my guest today here on the verge of planting season. It's great timing. Mike Naig, who's the Secretary of Agriculture in Iowa. We've talked about some hot button issues already, tariffs, immigration. But I want to go to one now that, you know, a lot of politicians take credit for other people's programs. Well, this isn't the case here because you came up with this one, the Choose Iowa program. I did some research on it. You developed it. Talk about it, how it's grown, what it does, and congratulations on its success so far.
Oh, we're so thrilled with this program, and yes, we created it, yes, it's an initiative, a priority for me. But I have to tell you, I got to give credit where credit's due. Man, do we have a great team that's working on this, and the other thing that we had the benefit of doing, we made good use of calling others. There are some famous state branded programs, Fresh from Florida, Go Texan, Got to Be NC, Indiana Proud, you know. And what we were able to do is to we called up my colleagues and our colleagues and said, hey, tell us the most important things. Tell us the thing you would never do again. Tell us the, you know, and we were able to really glean that. And so when we put together the Choose Iowa program, we were able to just learn from everybody's wisdom. And I'm just really proud of what's come of that. So we launched it at the state fair in 2023, so just a year and a half ago-ish. And we're sitting at, and this is funny, I have to say it this way, which is as of today, it's 215 members. Because if you asked me tomorrow, most likely that's going to be 216 members. We are literally adding a member a day since the beginning of 2025. It's just wildly popular. And here's the origin. I sort of say it came out of one thing good and one thing not so good. The one thing good is that you've got a growing trend, this tendency, and there's survey work that's been done, polling that's been done, and it shows that more than 75%, actually the number's more in Iowa, it's above 80% of folks will go out of their way to select a product that they know is an Iowa product. And so I always use the example of if you were standing in front of the barbecue sauce section at your local fairway and looking at the 75 bottles of barbecue sauce, because you know what I'm saying is true. If you knew, and if you saw a Choose Iowa label on that, or you said Made in Iowa was on that, or your home state, I realize we're close to, we got Illinois listeners, I'm sure, but you know, if you saw that and you knew it was local, you're going to tend to go out of your way to find it. Here's what survey also shows is that you might be willing to pay even a little bit more for that local. So that's the trend line. And then we came out of COVID, frankly, and there were a lot of folks talking about supply chains and supply chain resiliency and shortening your supply chain and understanding where things come from. And so we said a good thing and a not so good thing merged. And we said, now is the moment to launch Choose Iowa. And we got everything from people selling meat direct to consumer. That shouldn't be a surprise. Processing local at a meat locker, selling direct. Fruits and vegetable production. On-farm dairy processing. Cheese, ice cream, frozen yogurt. Cut flowers, milled flour, textiles, soy candles, horticulture, wine, beer, spirits. It is just incredible the variety that we're seeing. And we're really pushing. We believe we've got something here. So chooseiowa.com is where you can go to find the directory. And we've got a really exciting summer program coming up where we're trying to get folks on to go visit those farm stores. Go have a farm-to-table dinner experience. We're working with chefs that are sourcing locally. I mean, if you can't tell, I'm really excited about this. And we've got a great team. We hired somebody that's got experience with another state's branded program. So we did a little recruiting. And we brought in just a dynamo director, and I'm just excited about where this is going.
I'm just really curious how you knew that I stand in front of the barbecue sauce aisle at Fairway. Anyway,
because I'm doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. So much of this, as our listeners can gather, so much of the job of Iowa Ag Secretary is expanding markets for Iowa products. Yep. We talked about the Secretary's trip to Guatemala, Costa Rica trade mission last month, the Choose Iowa program. I know you were working on this as well, the year-round E15, that the EPA just made a big ruling on. What does that mean for Iowa farmers?
Well, and that's right. And we do talk about it that way, which is we should pursue markets for our farmers anywhere that we can. By the way, I forgot one high point I wanted to talk about Choose Iowa. It's also
That's
a great
okay.
chance for beginning farmers, young and beginning farmers who are looking for, they can get onto a few small acres or they've got a small cow herd and they can sell direct. And so that's been a fun little aside, but I'll just add that. So we'll go to choose, let's get markets wherever they are, the very local through Choose Iowa. Let's use and promote as much use of U.S. ag products in the U.S. as possible. And then let's go export. Biofuels is one of those great examples of how we can use and really use more of the corn and soybean and the biomass that we produce in this country, but in this state, certainly, to make biofuels. And we're number one in ethanol production. So one of those, I hesitate to even call it low-hanging fruit because it has been anything but easy. But here's the thing that we have roughly 10% ethanol blend across the country. And yet we have the vast majority of vehicles can absolutely safely, effectively, and efficiently burn a 15% blend. And most of the fueling infrastructure, not all, but we're working through this, can carry 15% blend of ethanol. And so, my goodness, why not go there? And it's homegrown, it's domestic sourced, renewable energy, and you can use 50% more. And here's the other thing is we'll have another report that the Department of Revenue will put out a report this spring that'll show fuel purchasing in the state of Iowa. The last couple of years, there's been a 50% increase in the amount of E15 that's been sold in Iowa. And every time you pump a gallon of E15 or unleaded 88, you're saving roughly 15 cents a gallon. And as the father of two teenage drivers, I'm watching that pretty closely, my wife and I. And so, you know, it saves. And what we're also, those numbers show is that when Iowans have access to that, those blends, they choose them. And so we're really working to ensure that we can get that. So a permanent solution. We're appreciative of the waivers that the governor has shown tremendous leadership on in the Midwest. The EPA is providing some emergency waivers. What we need is a permanent solution, which is really congressional action. And so maybe the Farm Bill is an opportunity to do that. Maybe a continuing resolution. We'll look for every opportunity that we can.
We'll switch gears here a little bit. And I've had some guests on over the last 3 or 4 months who've talked about water quality issues, especially as they relate to the large hog facilities, CAFOs, and concerned about Some of the impacts of agricultural practices on water quality in Iowa. And I will say that their criticism is bipartisan, directed towards leadership of both parties. What's your response to that, Mr. Secretary? I mean, I nobody wants bad water, but also, you know, there's industry interests and all. But what's your response, I guess, to critics who say the water quality is getting bad in Iowa and has potential harmful impacts?
Well, look, I like to start by saying, we are focused on this in a way that we haven't been before in the state of Iowa, meaning there's never been more awareness, more effort, more resources, and more partners that are working on improving water quality in the state of Iowa than there is today. And that's saying something because we've had an effort around funding soil conservation as a state since the 70s. I have to say the 1970s, you know, because that's been long enough. But look, there's an effort to do that. We have the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy that includes really talking about point sources and non-point sources. So you're talking about ag and non-ag, urban and rural. And so we have a strategy that looks across the entire landscape of the state of Iowa. So there is a recognition that there's more that we want to do and need to do in the state of Iowa. And of course, what we want to also do is maintain that balance, which is to say that you've got development in urban areas, you've got wastewater treatment and drinking water infrastructure that you need. We also want to be productive and profitable in agriculture, and yet we all need to recognize that this is a shared resource. And so that's really defined or really motivated our actions here over the last now several years. So again, I go back to the 1970s, the state of Iowa becomes the first state in the nation to invest in soil erosion prevention. You've had a USDA program since the 1930s. The state of Iowa comes in the 70s, and it's always been focused on soil. Fast forward to, 12 years ago now is when we really were thinking about how do we implement the nutrient reduction strategy to look at nitrates, nitrogen loss, not something that we had thought about collectively in those previous years. We'd always thought about phosphorus and soil. And so it is a new day when it comes to that. Here's the good news. In the then 10, 11 years since the strategy's been adopted, we're now setting records for conservation getting done in the state of Iowa. We just set the third consecutive record for conservation work getting done. And anybody that's involved in this is also saying, that's not good enough. We want to go faster. We want to do more. And so what I would say to the folks that say we're not going fast enough is, you watch our pace. It's growing. It's accelerating. And we're very proud of that. There's a lot of work. And that's not the Iowa Department of Ag alone. That is working with partners. There's 300 plus partners that work on this, these efforts, literally thousands of people that are working on this. And we're very encouraged by that. So that's our focus, trying to work in all those landscapes. Cover crops are a good example of where this is where you plant, you know, you're planting something in the fall to cover that ground throughout the winter months that usually it lays open and exposed to wind and erosion, water, those types of things. And you can put covers on those and it ties up the nutrients, keeps the soil in place. We had a few thousand acres of cover crops in the state of Iowa before the nutrient reduction strategy. We're sitting at about 4 million acres today. We need to be at several more million acres, and we're pushing for that every day, every year. But I just use that as an example of it didn't all happen at once. It started slow and the trajectory is moving. So we're doing that across the landscape.
Mr. Secretary, we've run out of time. I've got some other topics. I'm just going to have you back maybe in the fall to talk about what's going on in Des Moines. But my guest today has been Mike Nagy, the Secretary of Agriculture in Iowa, a very busy person. And Mr. Secretary, I'm very grateful for your time today. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. I think it would make sense for us to talk in the fall. Then we can see how the year went from a growing season standpoint.
That sounds good to me. Thank you.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.